Introduction. It was the summer of 1984 in Ortonville, Michigan, a lakeside blip on the map somewhere between Detroit and Flint. The second session of Camp Young Judea, province to a few hundred kids from the American heartland, was underway, and Bunk 7 fielded a formidable softball team. There was one problem. In keeping with the camp's theme of community and democracy and egalitarianism and the like, the rules dictated that every member of the bunk was required to bat and play the field. Although eight members of Bunk 7 ranged from capable to exceptional softball players, the ninth was, in a word, tragic. One poor kid from Iowa, whose gangly body resembled a map of Chile, we'll call him Ari, thus sparing anyone potential embarrassment, was a thoroughly pleasant bunkmate, armed with a vast repertoire of dirty jokes and a cache of contraband candy. Unfortunately, Ari was sensationally non-athletic. Forget catching a ball. Asking him to drink his bug juice from a straw would mean confronting the outer limits of his physical coordination. Robert Redford was starring in The Natural that summer, and here, on another baseball diamond, was the unnatural. Not surprisingly, when Bunk 7 took the field, Ari was dispatched to the hinterlands of right field, on the fringes of the volleyball court, the position where, the conventional thinking went, he was least likely to interface with a batted ball. The games took on a familiar rhythm. Bunk 7 would seize an early lead. Eventually, Ari would come to the plate. He would stand awkwardly, grip the bat improperly, and hit nothing but air molecules with three swings. Glimpsing Ari's ineptitude, the opposing team would quickly deduce that he was the weak link. When it was their turn to bat, they would direct every ball to right field. Without fail, balls hit to that area would land over, under, or next to Ari, anywhere but in the webbing of his borrowed glove. Eventually, he'd gather the ball, and with all those ungovernable limbs going in opposite directions, make a directionless toss. The other team would score many runs. Bunk 7 would lose. A few weeks into the summer, the Bunk 7 brain trust seized on an idea. If Ari played catcher instead of right field, he might be less of a liability. On its face, the plan was counterintuitive. With Ari behind home plate, his clumsiness would be on full display, starting with the first pitch, and he'd figure prominently in the game, touching the ball on almost every play. But there was no base stealing allowed, so Ari's woeful throwing wasn't a factor. He might drop the odd pop-up, but at least the ball would be in foul territory, and the batter wouldn't advance around the bases the way he did when Ari dropped balls in right field. With the eight capable players in the field, Bunk 7 didn't let too many runners reach base. On the rare occasions when a runner might try to score, there was usually sufficient time for the pitcher or first baseman to cover the plate, gently relieving Ari of his duties, something that couldn't be done as easily on a ball batted to right field. There was a more subtle, unforeseen benefit as well. On pitches that weren't hit, it took Ari an unholy amount of time to gather the ball and throw it back to the pitcher. This slowed the game's pace considerably. The pre-bar mitzvah-aged attention span being what it is, the opposing team began swinging at bad pitches, if only to bypass the agony of waiting for Ari to retrieve the ball. And Bunk 7's pitcher started tossing worse pitches as a result. Ari never perfected the fine art of hitting, and eventually he ran out of contraband Skittles. But once he was positioned behind home plate, Bunk 7 didn't lose another softball game the rest of the summer. For two members of Bunk 7, a pair of sports-crazed 12-year-olds from Indiana, one named Moskowitz and the other Wertheim, this was instructive. The textbook strategy was to conceal your least competent player in right field and then hope to hell no balls were hit his way. But says who? By challenging the prevailing wisdom and experimenting with an alternative, we were able to improve the team and win more games. We've been friends ever since, bound in no small part by a mutual love of sports. Now, a quarter century later, with one of us a University of Chicago finance professor and the other a writer at Sports Illustrated, we're trying to confront conventional sports wisdom again. The concepts might be slightly more advanced, and the underlying analysis more complex, but